It is Wednesday, June 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, pro-democracy protesters are arrested in Hong Kong.
They've been calling for a direct democratic election.
A worldwide cyber attack affects banks, government offices, and companies. And singer Katy Perry releases a new song that could be about a potential feud with another pop artist. It's all ahead. Hong Kong police have arrested about 30 pro-democracy protesters a day before Chinese President Xi Jinping is to make his first state visit to the city to celebrate the 20-year anniversary of the territory's transfer from Britain to China. The protesters huddled around the forever blooming golden Bohemia statue, a gift from China placed at the site of the 1997 handover ceremony. They demanded open democracy and the release of Nobel Prize-winning activist Liu Xiaobo. The demonstrators included 20-year-old Joshua Wong, who helped lead the 2014 Umbrella Movement protests. I spoke with VOA correspondent Bill Ide, who's in Hong Kong.
Well, for a second day straight this week, pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong have climbed or surrounded this Bohemia flower in the Bohemia Square that's near the conference center, where the 20th anniversary will be held later this weekend, where Xi Jinping will attend the 20th anniversary of Hong Kong's return to China. They've been calling for a direct democratic election. And also, because we learned earlier this week about the condition of Liu Xiaobo, they're calling for his unconditional release as well. Since earlier this afternoon, they've been surrounding and some on top of this flower statue that's here right next to the conference center near the bay in Hong Kong. And over the past 2 hours, they've been slowly removing all of the protesters. Right now, as I'm speaking with you, there's one more protester who's left with the megaphone on top. You can probably hear him a little bit in the background.
And I believe there's some prominent activists have been arrested.
Yes, I would assume that's the case. I've been here, but they were taken away and police gave them several warnings. So I'm sure there will be some kind of legal measures that will be taken against them for denying, you know, not responding promptly to police's orders to disperse. So I don't know at this point exactly what kind of punishment will be meted out.
I just wanted to ask you about the significance of the location. I mean, you were saying that President Xi Jinping will be there later, but also I believe that this, I don't know if you call it, it's a structure or statue, that was a gift by mainland China to Hong Kong. Is that right?
That's correct. And, you know, it's the main thing, though, I think, is not only is the symbol, the flower is a symbol of Hong Kong. The other thing is that, you know, it's right here in front of this conference center. Security is being beefed up ahead of Xi Jinping's arrival. He arrives tomorrow. And, you know, they're really taking the opportunity, I guess, to use this location to express their displeasure with the way the Chinese government has handled the one country, two systems model. Activists earlier this week had remarked that the one country, two systems model at this point has already turned into the one country, one and a half systems. It's already moving close to the point where that China has complete control over Hong Kong, or so much so that they feel that the freedoms that existed when Hong Kong was returned to China have eroded dramatically.
Okay, Bill, what is the overall atmosphere like in Hong Kong now?
Well, in particular, this whole protest that's been going on this evening has been quite refreshing coming from Beijing. You know, in Beijing, when we go to cover events where there are protests, the treatment that we get from police is quite different from here. You know, there were police barricades quite far away from where this was taking place. And, you know, all I had to do was show them my press card and I was let in. The protesters, of course, are voicing their views and shouting what they want to happen. But at the same time, police are handling this in an orderly manner, which, you know, coming from Beijing, it's just a huge contrast where, you know, routinely when we do our job trying to do the basics of things, we'll get detained.
That's VOA correspondent Bill Ide in Hong Kong. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, lots of different stories trending across the internet, some that have carried over actually from yesterday into today. And one of those is the contentious back and forth between Deputy White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders and a journalist named Brian Karam, who's actually an executive newspaper editor, who called her out and said, oh, well, you keep talking about fake news and how journalists are promulgating fake news. We're just trying to do our jobs. And so this was a very contentious back and forth that got a lot of social media attention. But shortly after that exchange, another bit of news came out that had a lot of people chuckling and some calls of hypocrisy. It was discovered that at a number of President Trump's golf clubs, there are issues of Time magazine that are framed on the wall that have Donald Trump on the cover and a headline that says the Apprentice ratings are through the roof. Well, it turns out that those Time magazine covers are actually fake.
Oh, really?
There are websites where you can go and make up fake magazine covers, and you can name yourself Person of the Year or whatever else you want to do. So he had a number of these covers at his golf courses around the country. And so lots of people laughing at this, saying, well, for an administration that is so focused on fake news and how much the media promotes fake news, this is literally fake news because it is a fake magazine cover. So some chuckles out of that, but also people saying it's on a serious note, that it is a bit of hypocrisy that this attack on the media is going on while he has these things up there to promote himself.
Well, he probably would say, you know, that he just did this in a bit of fun, kind of, you know.
And that's what defenders are saying. They're saying, well, look, everybody does this kind of thing. You can go, like I said, on these websites to make up these covers. It's not as though he was trying to pass it off as real news. Everybody knows that it's kind of in jest, but creating a little bit of debate about these fake magazine covers. And then another bit of news that we found out yesterday from Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg carrying into today. Facebook yesterday crossed the 2 billion user threshold. So
wow.
Quite a momentous achievement for Facebook. This is something actually that's, I think, pretty carefully timed with Facebook's recent announcement that they want to focus on building global communities in the midst of this 2 billion achievement, because as Mark Zuckerberg was replying to a number of the people who were congratulating him on this Facebook post, someone said, you have to go even further and get the whole world. And he said something to the effect of, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get it so this is a global social network, building global communities, bringing people together. And so that's been the story of the past week with Facebook in particular, shifting its mission to try to be more of a global social network. Certainly with 2 billion users, he's got a good chunk of the world to work with there. But it'll be interesting to see how that evolves and develops as they go for the next billion users. We'll see how long it takes them to get that. It took a little less than 5 years to get from 1 billion to 2 billion. We'll see how long it takes to get to 3.
Yeah, it should be fascinating to see that. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The U.S. Defense Secretary says Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has heeded Washington's warning not to use chemical weapons. North Korea threatens to execute the former South Korean president. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro said a stolen police helicopter fired on the country's interior minister. And India protests mob killings. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new 25-year global study suggests cardiovascular disease is now the cause of one-third of all deaths throughout the world. The study reports that in 2015, nearly 18 million people worldwide died from this family of illnesses, which includes heart attack, congestive heart failure, coronary artery disease, as well as stroke. More than 400 million individuals globally are living with a cardiovascular disease. The report lists people living in Eastern Europe, Central Asia, the Middle East, South America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Oceania have the greatest number of cardiovascular deaths. The study also indicated the 20-year decline in CVD deaths in countries such as the United States, Australia, Japan, and those in Western Europe have begun to ease off and plateau. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Cypriot leaders are urged to seize the opportunity to unify their island. A major cyber attack, the second in 2 months, swept across international boundaries Tuesday, affecting computer networks in Russia and Ukraine the most, to a lesser extent in Britain, France, Italy, Germany, Poland, and the United States, and parts of Asia Wednesday. More than 300,000 computers were impacted last month by a ransomware virus, indicating that many networks remain vulnerable to increasingly aggressive hackers. The virus affects networks using Microsoft Corporation's Windows by encrypting hard drives and overwriting files, then demanding a ransom payment to restore access. Tim Rawlins, director of the UK-based cybersecurity consultancy NCC Group, said the hacker is using a very old exploit to attack IT systems.
Really, we have built up over the years a huge digital debt. We haven't been patching our systems effectively. We haven't been keeping them up to date. And that really has led to this sort of problem occurring again and again. This is a repeat of a WannaCry type outbreak. And it really comes down to the fact that people are not doing, they're not focusing on what they should be focusing on. The very simple premise of patch your systems.
Rawlins said computer systems must be patched properly and kept up to date. Microsoft said the virus spreads through a flaw that it patched in a security update in March. Cedric Layton, who operates his own crisis management consultancy, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty via Skype from France that such attacks are complicated, not only because of the scope of the attack, but also because it's an assault on how the world increasingly conducts its business.
Is a targeted attack against some elements of the Ukrainian government, Ukrainian banks, as you mentioned, and of course the Russian gas and oil sector. The source of this attack is one that is somewhat unknown at this time, but there are certain indications that we do actually know that there are various elements that are actually looking at this for the purposes of extracting payment in the form of ransomware. What is interesting about this particular case is that the email system that is supposed to be used to deposit the Bitcoin ransoms has actually been disabled. So the hackers in this case may not get what they bargained for.
This report suggests that the attack includes a code known as Eternal Blue, which cybersecurity experts believe was stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency and was also used in last month's ransomware attack.
Eternal Blue was a Microsoft Windows exploit that had a similar protocol to the WannaCrypt ransomware, and that, of course, caused those widespread outages that you referred to. The basic issue here is that Eternal Blue, which may very well have been associated with the National Security Agency, was something that Microsoft actually fixed back in March.
So how does somebody using a computer determine that they've been hacked into? What do they see?
What they'll see on their screen is basically usually with a black background and red writing, they will see what looks like computer code showing up on their screen. But it will be in plain English that your files have been, in essence, taken over, and you won't be able to recover your files without paying the money for a decryption service, which would, of course, be provided by the hackers. So they will instruct you to send a certain amount, usually $300 worth of Bitcoin, to an address that is on the actual display. And then they will actually ask you to, in essence, enter this key. It's similar to purchasing some things or securing your data via one of the services like Amazon. And that is, in essence, what it does, except it looks far less pretty than a website like Amazon's would look like.
Cedric Layton said a sustained cyber attack could have a significant negative impact on the global economy. He called it a race against time as unethical hackers, cyber criminals, and state actors develop malware undetected by traditional cybersecurity methods. The UN Secretary General is urging rival Greek and Turkish Cypriot leaders to seize what he calls an historic opportunity to reunify their island, which has been divided since 1974. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was not at the opening session of the resumed Cyprus talks, but he sent his personal representative, Under Secretary General for Political Affairs Jeffrey Feltman, to deliver a message to the two Cypriot leaders and the guarantor powers that they should seize this opportunity.
This is a historic opportunity to solve a problem that has been there for decades. And what we heard this morning gave us the hope and the conviction that the leaders and the three guarantors have come to this conference with the determination to overcome the challenges and resolve the issues.
Feltman says Guterres plans to join the talks later this week. Special UN advisor on Cyprus, Espen Barth Ida, calls the first meeting encouraging. He says the participants made it clear they have come to the Swiss mountain retreat of Khan Montana to try to solve the problems that have been plaguing them for decades. He says the question of security guarantees remains the most difficult problem to overcome. But he adds other outstanding issues on territory, property rights, governance, and power sharing also need to be resolved. He says the United Nations will do what it can to facilitate this difficult negotiating process.
But at the end of the day, of course, it's the responsibility of the conference participants to go that final mile, to think outside the box, to try out some new ideas so that we finally can go down from this beautiful Swiss mountain with a plan.
Ida says the conference could be extended beyond the planned ending date of July 7th. He notes everyone is here for the long haul. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Could a new single be the latest indication of a feud between two prominent pop singers? VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with a possible speculation.
We're talking about a brand new song from Katy Perry. But before we get to the story of the new song, I wanted to congratulate Katy Perry on doing something that no artist has done before her. In fact, only 14 songs in the history of the Recording Industry Association have sold over 10 million copies individually as single songs. Katy Perry's got three of the 14 now with her song Roar, that has just achieved diamond status. So congratulations, Roar, Dark Horse, and Firework for Katy Perry are all diamond certified, which means they've sold over 10 million copies. She's had 21 singles in her career sell over a million copies, and three albums of hers have gone on to sell over a million copies. Now, she's just put out her fifth album, Witness, which is the number one album on the Billboard album charts right now. Congratulations to Katy on that. And today, we're going to be checking out her brand new single from her brand new album. It's the third single from the album, and it's called Swish, Swish.
A tiger, don't lose no sleep, don't need opinions from a shellfish or a sheep. Don't you come for me, no, not today. You're calculated, I got your number.
Well, now, Katy Perry, recently she was involved in the One Love concert in Manchester for the victims of that horrible bombing at the concert recently.
Yes, the event that was put on by Ariana Grande. It's, yeah. they raised several million dollars. She is getting ready for her own individual world tour. to promote her brand new album. So she's gearing up for that. A couple of weeks ago, you may have heard that she was on the internet doing a live stream, even showing her sleeping. There was like 40 cameras in this house, and she did her workouts in front of the world to see, and some 100 million people actually went online to watch Katie do her thing. The connection is, of course, the album's called Witness. This was a chance for us all to witness a day in the life of Katy Perry. Now, the new song that she's got out, which we just heard, Swish Swish, features Nicki Minaj. Katy and Nicki have something in common. They both have a feud going on. Nicki Minaj has a feud with an artist named Remy Ma. The two of them have exchanged their little jabs at one another. Katy Perry and Taylor Swift have a little thing going on. And this all started several years ago when Katy borrowed several of Taylor's backup dancers on a tour. Taylor was off. Katy was going on tour. So no harm, no foul. The backup dancers were planning to return to Taylor. She didn't like that. So she released a song called Bad Blood.
Oh.
And now there are those that believe this new song, Swish Swish, is Katy's retort to Taylor Swift. And Katy was recently asked about the feud, and she said she started it, and it's up to her to end it. She went on to say that she's put in a couple of calls to Taylor Swift, and they've gone unreturned. So she's made her effort. She's extended the olive branch, but no response from Taylor's camp. The lyrics of the song Swish Swish include, "Don't you come for me." A lot of people believe that Katy wrote that to Taylor Swift, about Taylor Swift. So, and Katy explains her song as being an anti-bullying message. It's for anybody who's ever been bullied, pushed around, taken advantage of. This is a song for them. But she won't specifically say this is about Taylor Swift or for Taylor Swift. So, you know, the new song just came out. It's the third off the new album. She's already had success with Chain to the Rhythm and Bon Appetit. So now we've got Swish Swish from Katy Perry.
Very interesting story behind that song.
Mm-hmm. Lots of interesting stuff going on behind the curtains.
Sounds like that. Okay. Very territorial about their backup performers. Okay. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossing.
Swish, swish, swish.
And that's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The refugee situation in Uganda has reached crisis proportions, said U.S. Ambassador to Uganda Deborah Malik. In remarks to the Uganda Solidarity Summit on Refugees, she warned, to prevent a broader humanitarian disaster, the response of Ugandan authorities and the international community must address three interconnected issues. First, we must collectively meet the needs of the refugees themselves so they can live in safety and dignity. Second, we must address the needs of local hosting communities to support their resilience. Finally, we must stop the main driver of this refugee crisis, the ongoing conflict in South Sudan, that has displaced millions with hundreds of thousands seeking safety in Uganda. The U.S. government's participation in the summit reinforced the U.S. commitment to the 2016 New York Declaration for Refugees and Migrants, which demonstrated the unity of the international community in humanitarian efforts to save lives, protect rights, and share responsibility on a global scale. The United States, Ambassador Malik noted, is the single largest donor in the affected areas of Uganda. And as conditions have worsened, we have increased our contributions significantly. Since October 2016, the U.S. has provided nearly $154 million for humanitarian assistance, including $57.4 million announced by President Trump on May 24th, and the U.S. remains committed to providing such support. However, said Ambassador Malik, more resources and commitments from both the government of Uganda and the international community are needed. Ugandan authorities have demonstrated leadership in their treatment of refugees, but given the overwhelming numbers, they must begin to do more to protect this population. In particular, the Ugandan government needs to provide more security personnel in settlement areas where there are growing reports of violence, especially against women, she said. Finally, she emphasized there can be no beginning to a resolution of Uganda's refugee crisis without a lasting and durable political solution to the conflict in South Sudan. Neighboring countries and the international community cannot be expected to bear this burden indefinitely because of the unwillingness of the parties in South Sudan to end the violence. 4 million displaced South Sudanese people, including nearly 1 million living in Uganda today, deserve better.